Thanks for sticking with us back here at Rosie on the House in our Outdoor Living Hour. We were talking about weed control and weed prevention, but you know what else you're doing with weed prevention more than anything is insect elimination. I mean, that's just harboring for all the pests. And I mean, if we can eliminate the weeds to begin with, then we don't have to kill the weed later. And if we do it fast enough, or once the weeds are up, you know, now we're eliminating additional chemical spray for bug control.
You know, weeds are also competition for water and nutrients as we get, you know, further into the season. So they're competing for water and nutrients. They're harboring insects and even diseases in some cases, like powdery mildew will grow on a lot of our weed varieties here. So it's just a good idea to control them. And they're all much easier to prevent, if you can, with pre-emergent, or catch them when they're young. I mean, when they're young, you can just go out there with your foot a lot of times and just kind of pull them up, you know, just kind of take the toe of your shoe or boot and get a little bit under the ground and the roots and everything will come up, you know. But as they get bigger and they get well rooted, then they're a lot harder to get rid of. They're a lot harder for, it takes more herbicide to kill them. If you're going to spray a little herbicide when they're tender and young, they burn up real quick. If you can't prevent them with pre-emergent, try and control them before they get big. Then you also don't have the problem of disposing of a bunch of dead material. If you spray big weeds, then you got big dead weeds to contend with. And certainly you don't want to let them start flowering and go to seed, or you're going to have weeds again. Sometimes in the same season, they can regenerate and grow back.
So what types of weed killers? We'll kind of work backwards now, because we've got existing weeds we're going to try and manage, and then we'll go to pre-emergence. What am I looking for?
Well, first of all, you got to identify the weed. Do you have a broadleaf weed, something that's not a grass? You know, grasses can be weeds too. Petunia can be a weed if it's in the middle of your rose bushes. So it's just a plant that's misplaced in the wrong spot. So do you have a grassy leaf weed or a broadleafed weed? If you've got a broadleafed weed, then we can use, you know, a certain type of chemical as opposed to grass. Now, where's it growing? So that complicates things. So if I have a broadleafed weed growing amongst my broadleaf shrubbery, well, probably anything I kill one is going to kill the other. If I have a grassy weed growing in my grass lawn, well, the same thing that's going to kill the weed is going to kill my lawn. So we have to identify the weed and then identify where it's growing. Is it in gravel or is it in lawn? Is it in a flower bed amongst other plants? We have herbicides that will kill a grassy weed like Bermuda grass if it's growing in amongst your shrubbery. We can kill that grass without killing your shrub, even if it gets on it. And the opposite is true. If we've got a broadleaf weed growing in your grassy lawn, we can kill the broadleafed weed without hurting your lawn. So identify the weed, identify where it's growing, and then take samples when you go into where you're going to buy your products from. Pull the weeds up, put them in a bag. Don't wait 3 days. Let them dry out and take them while they're fresh. Take them in, say, Mr. Nurseryman, here's the weeds I've got, and they are growing in this kind of spot. How can you help me?
And in all of these cases, whether it's pre-emergent or weed killer, it's, you know, you got to follow the directions.
Well, that's part of why we need to identify the exact weed, identify exactly where it's growing, pick the correct product to control that, and then be responsible, follow directions, how it's mixed, how it should be applied. Don't apply when it's windy or breezy. You would be amazed when you are spraying a spray and little tiny atomized particles of moisture, how far they call it drift, how far that will drift and can get on your neighbor's plants, your plants. So, you know, do it. There'll be some type of temperature restriction as well on that product. Make sure you're applying it at the right time of day so it's not too hot or too cold. Make sure it's not windy. You know, use common sense. Don't go out there in your Bermuda shorts and flip-flops and spray, you know, and get it all over yourself. Make sure you clean yourself up good. Make sure you use gloves. Make sure that, you know, when you're done with your sprayer, that you wash it out and clean it thoroughly. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons that we've had issues environmentally over the years with certain things, and most of it is user error. It's been abused or misused or overused and or used incorrectly, and that ends up with all kinds of repercussions.
Follow the directions.
When all else fails. But no, from the start, before it fails, follow the directions.
Right, before. Now, is there anyone in particular that stands out over years? Bonide has been with us a number of years, and they've got a neem oil-based one that I found works real good. And it's, I don't know that there's anything I can suggest better than what you said earlier. Get them young.
You know, I mean, ideally using a pre-emergent in areas where you can to prevent, you know, things from coming up at all. And then catch them when they're young. Don't let them go to seed. If you can, it's great. Pulling weeds is great exercise. It stretches your leg muscles. It stretches your back muscles. You know, you know, if they're not too big and you can get out there and pluck a few weeds every morning, you know, it's great stretching exercise. And if they're not big and the soil is moist, you know, most of them pull out pretty easy. I mean, that would be the preferable thing, would be to minimize them. And then what ones you do get, catch them young when they're easy to pull. Unfortunately, we get situations like with this spring where it started not spring, it started in October and has been raining pretty regularly since then. And we've got now huge growth, which I don't think Paul Bunyan could pull these things up. You know, they're huge. They're well-rooted. So they're going to have to be, if you do mechanical, you're going to have to literally cut them off and then dispose of the material. And that takes time and space in our landfills, all of that. So
these aren't the kind of weeds you could compost.
Well, you could. There again, those big old trunks won't compost very good, but the leafy material would compost, sure. Sure, there's
As long as you get them before they
flower. Before they go to seed, yeah. If they're flowering or have seed on them, you don't want to probably compost them. Although, in theory, if you truly composted it to the temperatures that are required, it would eliminate a lot of the seed. But hardly ever do we eliminate it all. But, yeah.
A couple email questions here that have come in through info at Rosie on the House or by text at 411-923. As so much of our phone use is not doing talking on it. I mean, what percentage of your phone, your cell phone, are you talking on it versus doing something else digitally?
Oh, gosh, anymore? I don't know. But, yeah, talking's a minor part of it, isn't it? I guess I've never thought about that much, but it's certainly...
You know,
certainly
if we didn't
way
have
less than half.
A talk radio program where we take calls, I probably wouldn't have thought about it as much either, because it's really changed the dynamic of how call and talk shows communicate. So much of it is digital, or as good as cell phone, or as much as a cell phone can do. you still got to have listening experience to the listeners and hearing somebody in a car on a Bluetooth cutting in and out of service, going through mountain paths. No, it's not good listener experience, so we're a lot more picky on the calls we do screen. So anyway, with all that said, we are fielding your calls, and if it's a good, clear connection, we can put it on air, but we're going to get through some of the email questions that have come in. Spider mites. Someone's wrestling with spider mites. Is there an easy way to...
Well, no, there's no easy way on spider mites, unfortunately. They reproduce very, very rapidly every 4 days or so. They tend to be on plants that can be a little bit harder to control and spray on anyway, very fuzzy or needly things. Think of Italian cypress or junipers or pines or rough leaf things, rose bushes to some degree, lantanas, those types of things. So, and then of course they have a kind of a webby surrounding around them. So it takes a certain product and usually some type of wetting agent on that product to make it stick and adhere better. Spinosad, the advent of that has made it very safe to control mites. However, since it's an organic, and can be used on almost anything, and put a little bit of spreader sticker or a wetting agent in with that, and it'll make it work a lot better. But remember, you've got to do it probably every 3 to 5 days for several applications to make sure you get all the generations of the mites. And then keeping your plants hosed off. The one good thing about all this rain is, you know, mites kind of travel on dust particles. That's how they get moved from place to place. So we've had enough rain to keep things washed off and our plants clean. That certainly helps. If you've got big Italian cypress, and take a good heavy hard sprayer out there of just water once in a while and wash that dust out of them. And especially May, June, early July, before we get monsoon moisture, that'll help control them as well.
Gene with a 520 area code, which used to mean something. You know, I remember when 480 was East Valley, 602 was Central, and 623 was West. We get 928 numbers now of people that live in southern area. You know,
everybody's using their cell phone.
Yeah.
So yeah, exactly.
So maybe not central southern Arizona. This Gene wants to know about growing blackberries.
You know, blackberries, there's some varieties that actually do pretty well here in the desert. You've got to still plant them in the right spot. Afternoon shade is pretty much a must. They need a fair amount of water. I mean, if you go up in northern Arizona, central Arizona, at the base of the Mogollon Rim and find wild blackberries, you know, growing, they're generally always along Tonneau Creek, Christopher Creek, Horton Creek, where they're, you know, a little bit of shade and a fair amount of good moisture. So shady side of the house, shady yard, good moisture and a lot of room. Remember, they're, the old briar patch, bramble patch of berries. They take up some room. So
my favorite thing I pick out about spring is my peach trees are right out the master bathroom window.
Nice.
And every morning I get this pink bloom you don't see anywhere else.
Growing deciduous fruit trees has kind of a double value in the landscape because you get the flush of beautiful white to pink to, in some cases, reddish-colored blossoms in the early spring, and then you get the fruit to pick and harvest. Peaches, there's a peach called a Red Baron that has a big old double red flower, and it's a great peach as well. So
I'm going to have to get that now just for the flower. That'd be a perfect complement to the the pink that's existing.
It's a great just ornamental, even if it didn't produce a single peach. It's a great tree to have in the landscape if you're looking for a small flowering tree. It's awesome.
What are some other great color trees or plants?
Well, we're blessed, you know, this time of year we've got bougainvilleas and, you know, lantanas and hibiscus and Mexican bird of paradise and desert bird of paradise, and cassias have been blooming beautifully this year. And, you know, even the much maligned oleander, you know, they're here in another month or so, they'll be in their splendor. And then we've got trees, palaverdes obviously are, you know, take up a lot of our tree color, but jacarandas and bottle brush, and there's a bunch of those that, you know, are good for flowering. If you're looking for flowering plants and trees, we are blessed in this climate to have a pretty good variety of those.
Final segment of our Outdoor Living Hour coming up next here at Rosie on the House. It is a great time to enjoy the blooms. We love them for the view and the smell, but it's not just people that enjoy this time of year. It's rabbit and deer. Those blooms, that's just like sweet honey to them. And you know, if you've got rabbits or deer, they're very persistent, and they don't eat the ugly stuff first. They eat the pretty stuff that's in bloom and smells good first. If you want them to go away, we'll make them go away with Bonites. Deer and rabbit go away. All natural go away can be applied directly to plants you want to protect and keeps animals from eating them for up to 45 days, which is longer than most of the blooms are going to be out. Go away liquid can be applied directly to vegetables, fruit for protection up to the day you want to harvest them. Go away also comes in granular that'll let you create a barrier and protects your landscape for up to 2 months. Bonide products are family made in America, and you can find them all over the state, including Mesquite Valley Growers in Tucson, Treeland Nurseries in Mesa, or Summer Winds in Glendale. Bonide products are family made in America.